Hi, this is Keith Overholt coming to you at another edition of Stories of Hope. And today I have my friend Joe Hollingsworth. He is a friend of the mission and is a local businessman. And we'll talk a little bit about his story today and how he got involved in helping with Stories of Hope. And let's start there. Joe, tell us a little bit about who you are, maybe where you grew up. And
Yeah, I grew up in Birmingham in a suburb, Vestavia Hills. I was fortunate enough to be in that school system.
Yeah.
I had a great childhood. Parents, great parents, still together today. So, yeah, I graduated Vestavia and went to Auburn.
Okay.
As you can see by my cup.
Yeah, yeah. So for your Alabama friends, what do you tell them?
I just say War Eagle.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. So growing up in Birmingham, young guy, good upbringing. Was it in a Christian home or?
Yeah, I would say looking back on it as part of my testimony, you know, we went to church every Sunday. Mm. Mostly it was the big holidays. Went to Sunday school. Went to confirmation. I was in a Methodist church. Mm-hmm. So I went through the whole confirmation process, but really did not understand the good news of Jesus Christ. So growing up, I was certainly not a Christian. I would even say my parents were not Christians. We were checking the box. That was something that we were supposed to do. Mm. And we didn't have those home conversations that are so important.
Yeah. So just going to church doesn't align you with Christ completely, right? So
absolutely not. Yeah.
So going to church every week, what was the point in your life where you're like, listen, this isn't just about church. I've got to make a relationship with Jesus Christ. When was that in your life?
Yeah, I was 29 years old. So I had just gotten married. I was actually in church one Sunday. And I felt God drawing me to make that decision. Made that decision in 1999, and my life totally changed from that point on. It was just like black and white, total transformation.
Yeah. So you've been through college and all that already, and you're, you know, getting married, and not until 29, huh?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go back a little bit. You went to Auburn.
I did.
Right. What did you go there for?
I went to study mechanical engineering, and by the grace of God, they gave me a degree. So when they gave it to me, I ran off stage, and just so they wouldn't think anything more about that, maybe try to take it back. But yeah, it was a struggle for me.
Yeah.
I don't consider myself to be very smart. I mean, I really had to work and scrap and, you know, to get through Auburn. So, while I was at Auburn, lived kind of recklessly, like a lot of students do.
Yeah.
Drank a lot of alcohol, did that kind of thing, and was at a lot of band parties, and we would all sing this song, "I'm Going Straight to Hell," by a group called Driving and Crying that was popular at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking back and thinking, I knew that I didn't want to go to hell. I certainly didn't want to celebrate the fact that, hey, we're all going straight to hell. Look at how we're living. We're not living for Christ. We know nothing about it, and we're just going to live this lifestyle and do what we want to do, what seems right in the moment. So that is part of my testimony, because even if I had a couple of beers in me, I knew the way I was living wasn't right.
Yeah. So even then you were like, hey, I know this song is not something I should probably be singing, even though at the point you probably in your life, you weren't a Christian.
That's right. Right.
And so, what was it at 29 though? What was that? Something that really the Lord pricked your heart at that time and said, hey, you know, it's time to dedicate your life. What was that that happened?
You know, I don't want to say that, that I knew I had been married. I might have a family on the way. It's time to straighten up. Because that's kind of contradictory to what the Bible tells us. You know, only God can draw you to Him. It's not anything that I did, lest I would boast about it. I think it was just that time in my life that God chose to draw me to Him. I have no other explanation for that.
You know, I think about your church going, and there's a lot of folks like this. Fortunately, I became a Christian when I was real young. My mom knelt by my bed when I was 5 or 6 years old, and, you know, my dad was a pastor, and I was like, man, that's something I want too, you know. And I really think that even though I had times where I was a little bit away from the Lord, that was the time I really said, hey, I want to become a Christian. But, you know, some of my dad's messages through the years were like, it's a good thing it's not the first time that we hear about Jesus and we don't accept Him, that's the only chance we get. Because how many times did you sit in church and you heard the message and maybe didn't accept it? You know, and that's one of the things that we do here at the Mission is there's some folks that come in our door, they've been churchgoers their whole life, and they still ended up in the place that they were. And a lot of times there's either a rededication or there's a total renewal of their life. So what was the difference? You hit 29 and you said it was a change your life completely. What was the change?
Well, you know, people that knew me back then and know me now after that transformation, they just can't believe that that's me. My wife can't even believe that I used to live that kind of life. It's just not in the character that they know me now. So, a total transformation. I can't even believe that I lived that lifestyle, wanted to live that lifestyle. And frankly, it's kind of disgusting to me. If you talk to someone who is a believer, they're probably going to say my previous sin disgusts me. And frankly, you know, my present sin does too, but looking back at my former life, it's embarrassing. It's not something I want to really go back and remember. So when I think about high school reunions, things that attach me to the past, I don't get fired up about going back. Because, I guess as a believer, you should, because you could, you know, say, look at me now. What's happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. But I guess anything that attaches me to that past is not something I'd eagerly jump into.
And sometimes it's hard because when you think about the things you did and then the relationships we have with Christ now, you know, it's like, man, I think of it this way is, man, those, you know, he's being whipped. Are those some of those whippings that he's getting before he was on the cross because of the sins that I did, right? And it devastates me sometimes thinking about that. And so, but it's interesting you say that it was a complete transformation. We have people that come to the Mission that when they truly accept Christ, it's interesting. Sometimes they're like, man, I just don't have that taste in my mouth anymore. I that stuff with the alcohol or the drugs that I used to do, it almost makes my body sick now. As I, you know, I had one guy tell me one time, he said, listen, I went and just tasted a beer again or some hard alcohol. And he's like, man, it was almost like my system was rejecting it, you know? And so it's amazing what he can do when when we accept him into our lives and we really start serving him because he makes a transformation. We make the decision to follow Christ, but he's the one that comes in and changes the life, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So you have a business that you run. And how old were you when that started?
So I was 27. And prior to that, I graduated from Auburn in mechanical engineering and went to work at a foundry in Anniston, Alabama. And so I worked there 4 years. Really didn't appreciate the job. I didn't appreciate my boss. It was kind of a bad situation because it was kind of a workaholic situation. So I would be at work at 7. I would leave at 7. And when I was walking out the door, he would say, where are you going? And I thought, you know, I was not getting paid well. in hourly. I was probably getting paid a really low wage when you factor in all the hours. So, you know, my dad used to tell me, when the pain of your current situation becomes greater than the pain to change, then you'll change. But basically that was a way of saying it's not so bad right now, or you would be doing something about it.
Yeah.
So I got wind of an opportunity at Two Men in a Truck and in Birmingham. So I was in Anniston, and a friend of my dad said, there's a manager opportunity in Birmingham at Two Men in a Truck, and it pays really well. And I said, well, go down and talk to him. So I went down, talked to the owner, and he said, well, we don't have manager positions available, but, I mean, they're franchises. And a little light bulb went off above my head, and I thought, well, this is interesting. Can I work for you on the weekends? And he said, sure. So, of course, that was 27 years ago. I was getting paid $8 an hour. And so I was working on the trucks on the weekend. And so every day we had a little drop box for cash. So every day after I finished my move, I would, you know, drop that money in the drop box. And behind me were six other people. And I thought, you know, I don't mind working hard, but I'd just like to make more money. And that was my motivation at the time. So I started working for him, learned the business, and eventually quit my job in Anniston and bought the franchise here in Huntsville. And I was 27 years old at the time.
Wow. That's so young.
Yeah. I'm 54 now. And when I'm in training, teaching guys about moving, I say, well, I started this business when I was 27. Now I'm 54.
Yeah.
And I pause for them to say, well, you don't look 54, but I don't get that a bunch.
Yeah. Well, I'm 54 too. So,
is that right?
Yeah. Okay. So what, you weren't a business owner before that. What was it that, you know, I love hearing, I have an MBA and I love hearing how people got into businesses. So you started working with the guy and then you're like, hey, at some point I want to own my own, or how did that come about that you felt like, hey, I want to do a franchise?
Well, I got to say some people are motivated by money and some people are not. At the time that I got into Two Men in a Truck, I was motivated by money. I guess maybe my current situation, I was working a bunch of hours and I just wasn't able to pay my bills like I wanted to. And so that's probably what got me into that idea. But once I started working, I thought, you know, this is not that difficult. I mean, the work is hard, but surely I can scale this up and make some money doing this. And it's a franchise. So, you know, you're protected by, there's 400 other people doing it. At the time, there was 55 franchises.
Wow.
And now there's 400.
Wow.
So I just like the idea of being my own boss.
Yeah.
And probably fits my personality. I'm kind of a control freak. And so it works well with me. I don't know about my stress level. Probably doesn't work well with that. Any business owner would probably agree. But I like the idea of doing it on my own.
So when you're going into business or being thinking about, you know, hey, I want to do this on my own and, you know, have the franchise, were you married at the time? Or
I was not.
You were not. So tell us a little bit about how you found your wife and got married.
Kind of an interesting story there. So I was young. I wanted to be in Atlanta. So I moved to Atlanta, slept on the floor of a friend's apartment, interviewed there for about 6 months. And at the time, let's see, I guess that was not 97, 96, 97, the job market. It was tough to find a job. So didn't find anything in Atlanta. That was, you know, being young and single, that was the place to be. When I moved to Anniston, I was thinking, you know, this is a small town. My parents grew up there. I'm familiar with it. But for a single guy, this is going to be rough.
Yeah.
And so my mom had purchased a jacket at a store called Brooks in the mall. And that's when malls were big, I guess. But stopped in the mall, and there were three or four really good looking girls in that store. And I thought, well, maybe this isn't so bad. And
need to buy a second jacket.
Yeah, that's right. And so Angela, my wife, she was working there, and I guess everybody else had boyfriends or whatever, and they said, you need to call him. Hmm. She said, I'm not calling him, because I gave them a check, and my name and number was on the check. Hmm. She said, I'm not calling him. That's crazy. So Anniston isn't a big place.
Yeah.
So the guy that I worked out with in the gym, his wife knew Angela and eventually set us up. And so when she told her my name, she said, oh, that's the guy that came in Brooks. Hmm. I know exactly who that is. So we got set up on a date. Angela probably wouldn't want me to say this, but she stood me up the first
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
She said she had to go look at cars. And so I called her the day of the date, and I said, we still good? And she said, no, I'm going to look for cars. I said, okay, well, if anybody knows me, one strike and you're out.
Yeah,
so I was like, I'm done. And so we ended up getting set up again, and everything worked out. So we dated for 4 years and got married.
How old were you when you got married?
Let's see. I was 29.
So right about the same time when you started the business.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
No stress there, right? And getting married and starting a business.
It's funny, looking back on it, I would be totally stressed out now. And I don't know if that has to do with age.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was just telling some guys who were training this story. At the time, I was booking jobs. I was doing jobs, coming back, answering, you know, calls that had come in, booking more jobs, estimating. So I was doing it all.
Yeah.
But I wasn't married.
Yeah.
And so I think to your point, once you get married, you do have some extra stress. And obviously when you have kids, that exponentially increases stress.
How long after kids come along?
Let's see. Kate came in 2001.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many kids do you have total?
We have three.
Three kids.
Uh-huh.
And we know one's in Auburn, right?
Yeah. Kate is graduating Auburn. And she's in social work, human development and family science. She's going after her master's in social work at Sanford.
Yeah, we're going to try to bring her here when she's all done with
that. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
She'd love that.
Yeah.
And Jackson's at Auburn.
Hmm.
And Davis is a senior at Westminster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the kids grew up in a Christian home then. You became a Christian when you were just newly married. And so different for your kids, right? You know, you grew up in a church home, but not really a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter and your son go to school together. So, right. I mean, and it's a good Christian school, but it's still a personal relationship, right? You know, that was one of the things for me, growing up, you know, I had to make it my relationship with the Lord. And then when I had children, boy, one of my biggest burdens was my kids, because I can't be a Christian for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to accept the path that, you know, Jesus is their savior and that they're going to worship him and live for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they were baptized and, you know, big days in my life, but still it's got to be their walk with Christ.
That's right.
Same thing that we look at here at the mission, right? You know, when people come in, I wish I could put Jesus Christ in everybody's heart.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to accept that personal relationship. And you're a big supporter of the mission through your business and also through volunteering here. You know, talk a little bit about how you got involved with the mission and why is it something that you're passionate about?
Yeah. So I believe, you know, all of us are walking the earth and we're distracted by the flesh, which is totally in contrast to what Jesus wants for us.
Hmm.
And so we're constantly bombarded and distracted just away from the good news of Jesus Christ. Hmm. So that is paramount. And so do I get distracted by that? Every single day.
Hmm.
I have to be reminded all this other stuff that I'm doing, that is not important.
Hmm.
But spreading the word, being an ambassador for Jesus, that is what is important. Ultimately, that's what got me interested in the mission.
Hmm.
Y'all start there. You really don't start there. You provide physical needs, clothing, shelter, food, water, provide those physical needs. But ultimately, it's sharing the good news of Jesus Christ. And y'all have been doing it a long time. You do it well, and you have an infrastructure set up. So I have always thought, they're doing it so well, I'd like to partner with them. I mean, it's the least that I can do. I'd like for my money to go towards advancing the kingdom of God rather than, you know, other secular choices.
Sure.
So, and when you have a visit here, and if you're reading your Bible, it's just amazing. Like, everything that y'all do is providing, you know, for the needs of your neighbor. And so we're to love God and to love our neighbor. We're especially supposed to take care of believers. And you look at all facets of what the Downtown Rescue Mission does, and it's obviously tailored after what Jesus wants us to do. And so the last, y'all are expanding, you're constantly doing new things, but, you know, you think about Owen's House, the Women's and Children's Shelter, DRM, and you think about taking care of widows and orphans in their distress. Why is that important? And I think it's because that's a very vulnerable part of our society. And of course, in biblical times, it's very difficult for the woman to provide for herself. So I really have a heart for what y'all are doing with for women and children that have no other place to go. And let's face it, I've said this many times, I could certainly be here. One choice, one bad choice, and it could steer me to where I need some help. And so y'all take people where they are, you provide for their needs, you spread the good news of Jesus, and you don't just say, here it is, you know, hopefully you'll do something with this. You foster that over a year, and oftentimes you provide avenues to find a job, and you really care for these people. And I appreciate that, because it could be me.
In some of our morning meetings with the staff, I say, but for the grace of God, we could be on the other side of the wall, one paycheck away, or one accident away, or, you know, a death in the family. And a lot of times that's how some of these folks come here. You know, everybody says, well, you know, it's just that bum under the bridge, or, you know, and sure, there's some folks that have gone that path, but most likely about 90% of the time, it's somebody that's had some tragedy in their life that has pushed them towards addiction or towards alcoholism or towards just being homeless in general. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because my Bible reading today was Matthew 25, where it talked about, you know, when you do it to the least of these, you've done it to me. And I really think that that's something that the Lord commissions us to do. He says, if you see somebody that's hurting, give them the shirt off your back. And, you know, I love how that passage talks about, you know, that it was those who did it, you know, come into my kingdom. And I'm not a work-based kind of guy for Christianity, but I do think once you become a Christian, he tells you things you're supposed to do to continue your faith, right? So you part of Two Men in a Truck, which is a big partner with us through events that we do, and also you come here and you help us with our Bible studies and other things like that. But there's a big event that you guys do with us. Talk about that, Movers for Moms. How long ago did that start, and talk about how that culminated to what it is today?
I think the national program Movers for Moms started about 15 years ago. I believe we've been participating with y'all in that program for about 4 years. And so what we do is we collect toiletries, feminine products for the women in Owen's House. I think y'all have been the beneficiary for 4 years. And so you were the beneficiary last year as well. So we collect those items all the way up to Mother's Day, and then we bring those to the shelter. It historically has provided y'all supplies for about a year and a half, depending on how successful it is. But we've had, over the years, annually, 100 to 150 community partners. So it's certainly not something we're doing on our own. It's the community pulling together and going to Kroger, buying these items. We'll have an event at Kroger, fill the truck event, where people can go in, and Kroger is very hospitable. Well, they'll set up aisles just for these items that are on y'all's list of needs. And from what I understand from your staff, it's been really good because you have those items. And frankly, when you hear about someone who hasn't washed their hair, they've been on the streets, and they come in and they have a bottle of shampoo to use, I've just never really thought of how much I take that for granted. You know, if we're in the shower and we reach down and the bottle's empty, oh, well, we'll go buy another one.
Yep.
And we might have a hardship for one day, but when you hadn't washed your hair in a month and you have that bottle of shampoo, it's life-giving in some ways.
Sometimes can be transformational, even just that one bottle, or the feminine products that we give. And it's the great thing is it's been such a program that it's not just for the folks that are here, but if there's somebody that's in need in the community, we're able to give them things, you know, right from here that they don't have to be staying here to get those items, which has been tremendous for us, because it really, for us, that's one more touch that we're having for Christ, right? You know,
absolutely.
It's one more witness that we can be, hey, we're giving you this, but hey, here's what we do it for. We do it because our faith drives us to give it, right? And so it really becomes a testament. I love that partnership that we've had for the last few years with you guys with that. And a little bit more about your business. So when you started it, you were kind of the guy in the truck, and you were doing the scheduling. And how big is it gotten now for you with the area that you have for two men and truck?
How big has it gotten?
Yeah, your franchise.
Well, we have 20 trucks and have right now about 65 employees, and that varies. It just depends on the time of the year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we started with two trucks and, have grown to 20 over the years, but you know, with COVID, we tapered down a little bit, but, obviously Huntsville is really growing and expanding. That's awesome. I think we have a labor issue, though, so we kind of had to pump the brakes a little bit on that. That's the only thing that's kind of stunting our growth a little bit is labor.
Well, I ask about how many you have, because when I'm driving around town, I see two trucks all the time. That's the Downtown Rush Commission trucks for our thrift stores, and I see the two men in a truck trucks. So, and sometimes they're parked next to each other at a light, you know. Right. So, it's awesome how God has been able to grow that business for you. But not that you just have that business as your personal income, or that you're helping the employees that you have, but you know, you reach out and help places like the Mission. I know you're very involved in your church, and you know, it really has become an asset for you to use to give, right? And that's a big thing that's happened for you and your family.